Hello and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And today on the show, we are once again joined by Matthew Harris from Lighthouse Financial and Momentum Property. He is a property accountant. And in today's show, we're talking case studies. Look, over the last two episodes, we talked through some of the great theory about entities and tax. And now we're going to put it into practice with the case studies. So I know we've got two that we're going to talk today about, Matt. First of all, we're going to talk about restructuring from holding a property in your own name to an LTC. And then again, going from that one into a trust. So let's deal with the first one. Walk us through what happened here and the impacts of restructuring the way you're holding properties.
Thanks, Ed. We do a lot of restructuring work in this office, and accountants in general, property accountants, will recommend it. And there's lots and lots of good reasons to restructure: asset protection, tax benefits, estate planning, etc. So for the first example, this is something that we deal with quite commonly. Imagine that you bought a rental property 6 years ago. You paid $250,000, for example. It's now worth $700,000 because you've had it for a long time and you've got a minimal mortgage on it. But you've also got a $1 million owner-occupied house with $800,000 of mortgage. What we do with those situations is, as you come in the office, we would suggest that you move the rental property into a new structure. Quite commonly, that's an LTC. And why we do that is so that you can increase the cost base. So from an inland revenue perspective, you can only ever have a deduction for interest over the original cost base plus some improvements. And that's notwithstanding the fact the bank will disregard that. They'll lend you all the way up to $700,000.
Yeah. The banks don't really care how it's structured, but the IRD look at it differently, right?
Yeah, correct. So we do see a few people caught out with that, where the mortgage broker just goes and jacks
them. Just does it. Yeah. So you can't just take your $250,000 mortgage and increase it to $700,000 and then reduce your personal mortgage by the difference, right?
Yeah, you can't just do it for tax purposes. You definitely do it. whether inland revenue come along and catch that out or not is irrelevant. You want to do things properly if you can, and it's a pretty simple fix. What you do is you take that property into the look-through company at its market value. You borrow the full purchase price in the new entity, and then you pay off the mortgage on your personal home as much as possible.
And so does my debt go up that way?
No, you end up with the same two properties and same amount of debt. It's just where the debt sits is tax deductible, whereas before it wasn't. So a lot of people, first question, is this legal? Yes, it is. So inland revenue actually pretty helpfully have confirmed in some commentary questions we've been asked whether that is an acceptable restructure and whether that would be considered tax avoidance. So inland revenue has a section of the Income Tax Act, BG1, which is pretty wide, and it allows them to undo things that are tax avoidance effectively. And they've confirmed that in most situations where you sell to a related entity and increase the cost base and pay off private debt, is not tax avoidance.
Great.
So just on those numbers, for those of us who love numbers, so in that instance, you had a $250,000 mortgage against that rental property. You increased that by $450,000. So now you've now got $700,000 borrowed against that property, that rental property worth $700,000. Then you take that extra $450,000 and you pay it off against your owner-occupier mortgage, so it goes down from $800,000 to $350,000. So walk us through how that impacts the profit and loss for the rental property.
So obviously immediately it's going to change the yield on that property, but from a net cash flow position, it's going to make no difference.
In fact, it'd probably be better because the part of your mortgage that you're paying off will be principal and interest, and it'd be unlikely to be principal and interest on that investment property.
Yeah, depending on how long you've had it, absolutely. And number one rule for most people is get rid of non-tax deductible debt first. So you're always trying to get rid of the loan on your own occupied property wherever possible. And then, that leads on to other structuring protection that you can do, such as moving it to a trust unencumbered. So what happens is we look at that extra amount of mortgage and we go, what's the interest rate? Then we just times that by your tax rate, and pretty much we can figure out the cost benefit of it pretty quickly. Mm. In years gone by when the rates were, 5, 6%, even 4.5%, it was quite a lucrative thing to do. Now with rates sliding, we'd like to see a large amount of mortgage, or we'd like to see some other reasons for going into that structure. So it might be that you're going to continue on with a more aggressive property investment strategy.
Yeah, and the reason for this is just because those setup costs, right? Because the cost of doing this, you can't just move a property into a company. You've got to actually sell it from yourself to a company. So that involves two sets of conveyancing, essentially, a purchase and a sale. And of course, a valuation probably costs $700 as well, right?
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And the entity setup. So you probably want to allow about $5,000, $4,000, $5,000.
Yeah, I think probably. In most cases, we could use a desktop valuation as long as the bank were happy with it. So we'd get rid of that cost. But conveyancing is your largest cost by far. I'd allow $1,500 at least for that. maybe $2,000. Maybe depends where you live.
Yeah.
If you're in Auckland, a little bit more.
And so in that case, your rental properties therefore be making far less profit than it previously was because you're going to be paying so much more interest because that's just been restructured. But am I right in thinking that as a household, it doesn't affect your household budget because instead of making lots of profit on your rental property and making large interest payments against your owner-occupier or mortgage payments against your owner-occupier, you're just shifting it around.
Yeah, correct.
Yep, absolutely.
Fantastic. Now, let's talk about a case
study. Seems too easy, doesn't it?
Just making sure that I've understood you correctly here, Matt. Now, let's talk about moving that from an LTC into a trust. How has that worked? Walk us through a case study of that there.
For most people, over time, the yield profile should change on properties, and that's just simply because over time, rents should go up and theoretically mortgages should reduce. And also interest rates change and sometimes costs also reduce. So we see yields as a moving target. The higher, the better, obviously. What will happen is originally someone might have used an LTC because it was loss-making. Maybe they had two or three properties. They're both working professionals at the time. But people's lives are fluid. When you're looking forward, obviously you can't see what's going to happen. But when you look back, there's usually a clear pattern. So what we would do is imagine you had those three properties. They've turned positive because of interest rate drops and rent increases. Then also your wife has got pregnant, perhaps, and she's not planning on going back to work. So in that case, we would take those three properties and we would look to maybe go into a trust structure. We would do the same thing that we did for the individuals with the LTC. We'd get the desktop valuations or registered depending on what was required, and we'd jack the price right up to their market value and we'd shift them into that trust structure. And if there was any personal debt, we would try to reduce that also. So now we've got the same three properties in a new structure, and the reason that trust might be appropriate is because the wife is not going back to work, so her tax rate's going to start at 10.5%, where the husband probably is having a 33% tax rate, for example. So good benefit straight away.
And then in that case, roughly what would you be saving in terms of tax there?
Obviously, it depends on how much the yield is, or how much cash flow is coming out of the property and how much one earns and the other earns. But we usually, as a rule, we'd say if the bottom tax rate up to 14K is 10.5% and someone is earning over $70,000, they're going to be paying 33%. Mm. So we'd take the difference as probably what's going to be available. Mm. And also there can be other reasons for that trust structure. Maybe the husband's going into business as well, so you get a little bit of asset protection. Mm. But as I had said in a previous show, trusts are really flexible for earnings distribution. So when you've got a wife who's not working, for example, that will mean that you can distribute all the income to her.
Now, one of the things that just as we're talking about this that jumps into my mind that wasn't an issue previously that now is the bright line in here. And so if you are moving things between entities, you've just got to remember that potentially you're going to reset that bright line test and or trigger it. So say, for example, you've had a property for a few years and you decide, actually, now I'm going to move it into a trust. Then, of course, what happens there?
Yeah, so you basically just read my mind. I was about to mention the Brightline getting reset. So if you have a property that is within Brightline, so if it was purchased prior to 28 March 2018, it will have a two-year Brightline period. So quite often people are outside Brightline, they don't realise it because they think it's 5 years.
Yes.
If you're outside Brightline, it does reset. However, it will reset at the higher cost base.
Yes.
So if you sell within 2 or 3 years, and obviously we wouldn't go through a restructure like that if you had some short-term intentions to sell because that would make no sense. But imagine some situation changed and you had to. Your cost base that you're starting from for the Brightline is going to be quite high, so the gain should be quite minimal.
Yes.
If you're within Brightline, you've got a couple of choices. So it may be that the particular property hasn't gone up a lot in value, so in which case you're fine. If it's gone up a lot in value, you'd have to weigh any tax outcomes against the benefits.
Yes.
And traditionally, we wouldn't shift it. But if you had, in that example of three properties, it might be two are outside and one is in. We might still go ahead and restructure the first two and wait until the third one's out.
So again, because this is, you know, it feels like a paper transaction, you're moving it from yourself to yourself. But in a company, for example, if there has been a 100K increase and you trigger Brightline, then you're going to have to pay $33,000 in tax.
Correct. So it's obviously not very desirable. It's basically selling within Brightline period for a buy and hold investor is like kicking an own goal.
Yeah.
It just shouldn't be done because Brightline rules are very prescribed. It's a Brightline test, which basically means line in the sand.
Yes.
4 years, 364 days, you'll pay tax, and 5 years and 1 day, you will not. Mm. And so just really probably worth mentioning is that some people quite often will confuse the end date of Brightline as well. And just to be clear, the end date for most normal contracts is when you enter the contract to sell it, not settlement.
Right. So if you did your agreement 3 months out and had all your lawyer and your accountant settle this up, mm-hmm. and then you settled outside of Brightline or on the day of it ending, you'd still trigger potentially Brightline.
Correct. And I've seen a few people get that wrong, and it was not a pleasant conversation.
And look, over the last three episodes, we have been talking all about, you know, using accountants and the right way to set this up. Give us a sense of how much people can save, or some of your clients have been able to save because they've restructured and engaged a property accountant, because not every property investor uses an accountant. So roughly, what can you save by doing this correctly?
Yeah, I think first of all, you know, you wouldn't fix your own car, so why would you file your own returns? Every year we clean up a lot of mess from people who filed their own returns. Common one we're seeing at the moment is people file returns with losses still in them, claiming them, and then their revenue, of course, kicks them to the curb and they suddenly realise they need to go see an accountant because they didn't even know that the rules had changed. But a good property accountant, it should be able to make sure that you claim all the expenses that are applicable under the Tax Act.
It's important you still file a return to get those losses for a future date, because I think people thought with Brightline coming in, okay, well, there's no point filing my return anymore. First of all, you have to. Second of all, you get those benefits later on. So it's important that you build that up so that when you are making a profit, those profits aren't taxed or it's offset against the tax losses, right?
Yeah, so the ring fencing, people think the loss is just gone completely.
Yep.
Yeah, so first, valid point, you have to file a return. Profit or loss, it does not matter. There is a legal obligation to file that return. Part of being a good investor is complying with the rules, keeping good records, filing tax returns. But also the benefit of those losses is there in the future, so you should definitely be trying to claim them. So that's one way that accountants really help, make sure you get, you know, all the expenses that are allowable. Mention or note restructures when they're available. And a common example would be someone who has a wife that's not working. We see that a lot, but they have a property in their own name and they're paying the full rate of tax year on year. And yes, so there's some easy wins there. Yeah.
What's the most you've ever helped somebody save?
Oh, we...
Ballpark.
Ballpark. The most in one go. From a restructure, probably the most we've saved in one full year up front is about 15K.
And what would you have charged them for that?
16?
Yeah, 16 and a half, plus tip. No, probably a couple grand for that. To be fair, in a restructure, I expect to see in the first year at least twice the cost recovered.
Yes, yes.
But we commonly actually save people more in other situations.
Yes.
So, for example, I had one come over my desk the other day where a New Zealand resident moved to Australia. He'd had two rental properties left behind. He's been living in Australia for 5 years in the PAYG system, and his New Zealand accountant had been filing and returning his PAYG income in New Zealand for nearly those 5 years, and he was getting charged the tax difference. So we got him about 25K back. He was pretty happy.
And look, I just think when you're looking at investing properly, and if you want to treat this like a business, you need to use professionals. If you can't afford to use a proper accountant, don't get into property.
Fantastic. Let's wrap it up there. But please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. It really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, if you want to learn more about property with Andrew and I, why not come along to our live in-person Property Academy podcast recording. These are happening mid-October. It is the 20th, 21st, and 22nd of October. Remember, we have moved them from September because of the COVID alert level changes. We want to make sure that when we have this event, we're able to have a really good time meeting everybody and that we're holding it safely. We want you to be safe. So we are going to drop that link in the show notes. Tap or swipe over the cover art. Click on the link there. You'll be able to register absolutely free. Or if you're listening on a platform where you don't have show notes, I'm looking at you, Spotify, then go to opuspartners.co.nz/pod-event. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And we'll be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.